Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. Today we're talking about the Kavanaugh nomination hearings in the American Senate. We're also talking about that international pain in the backside, Brexit. And finally, Hitler is running for political office in Peru. He's being opposed by Lenin. I hope you enjoy. Thanks very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom is joining us from London, England. And as we prepare this program, I just want to make comments. Several things. One, again, to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, we are pre-recording this program earlier in the day. But secondly, in many regards, I'm glad to hear Tom's voice. And the reason, well, it's been Florence. We've a lot of conversation and a lot of concerns associated with hurricane recovery and the damages associated with Hurricane Florence. But life does go on. And in the process, it'll give us an opportunity to get a broader perspective of what's happening in the world. And I might add, maybe even, yes, a little levity. Now, I'm sure that some folks in here are listening to the program and going, oh, I want to call in. Well, if you can't call in because this is pre-recorded, please feel free to email us at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. That's viewpoints with an S, viewpointsradio@hotmail.com, or via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. So is that the introduction? Let's get back to our guest and foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, a good afternoon to you as we prepare this program. And thank you for joining us. And how's the weather in London? We'll find out about your stories in Florence here in just a moment. But how's the weather in London? First question.
The weather here is absolutely gorgeous. It's a lovely autumn day. Light sweater weather. I pulled my corduroys out of the cupboard. I've been for a nice cycle ride this morning. It's lovely and sunny. It's a very nice day. We've had quite a bit of rain here. Nothing like Florence, of course. Previous to this, it was pretty nasty for about 3 or 4 days. It's been pretty nasty. By the way, I was unable to speak to you last week for the reasons of Florence, mm-hmm. but I did do a podcast, and instead of the usual political spectrum, you on the far right and me on the center left.
I've never been on the far right. I'm always center, but go ahead.
I decided to go for the age spectrum, so if anyone wants to listen to my podcast, it was with my son.
Oh,
Christopher, who's doing a degree in international relations. He's just finished his master's and planning to do a PhD. So I thought that might just be a different perspective. So, lookaheadnews.com if you want to get the age spectrum as opposed to the political spectrum.
Oh, well, I would argue the age spectrum here as well, I being much younger than you. Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Fake news!
Tom, talk to us about the coverage of Hurricane Florence in the European community. Was there a lot of interest?
There was, and a lot of sympathy.
Well, I appreciate that.
Everyone was watching it with great concern because, we don't like Donald Trump, but, that doesn't mean we don't like America and Americans.
Wait a second. What has Donald Trump got to do with Hurricane Florence? But that's all right.
I think similar personalities.
Stormy. No, that's Stormy Daniels. I'm sorry. Okay. There was a fair amount of coverage on Hurricane Florence.
There was a fair amount of coverage, and all of it sympathetic and all of it of great concern. It's a heavily populated part of the United States. Mm-hmm. It's the part which is closest to us. A lot of people have family there.
Right.
If not, they have friends like me. Or they may even have listeners.
Oh, that's true, too. Yes. All right. Well, let's move on from Hurricane, from Stormy, a situation there in the Atlantic. I'm curious about some of the storms that are associated in Washington, D.C. But first on the topic here, Trump's the coverage of President Trump's address at the U.N. and the events at the United Nations conference.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that's really sticking, there's a couple of things which are sticking in people's memory there. One is that he got laughed at.
Well, he took it very graciously, I might add.
He did take it very graciously. I must say that was very good.
And not only that,
he did that quite well, and that has been noted.
And he received
applause.
It's also been
noted that, you know, he wasn't laughed with. He wasn't making a joke. He was being laughed at. And a lot of people have noted that. The other thing they've noted is what they've taken out of it was obviously Iran,
right?
Which is being discussed again today, as we know, but also the issue of globalism versus what he calls patriotism, and what other people call nationalism. Now, a lot of people here are drawing the distinction between the two, that patriotism, you know, loving your country is one thing, and it's to be admired, but thinking that your country is better than anyone else is wrong, and that is what leads to difficulties such as wars. And that is what a lot of people in Europe are really worried about.
You know,
that this emphasis on nationalism is creating a 1930s type situation, especially with the withdrawal of the United States from multilateralism. They're drawing parallels between that and America's non-involvement in the League of Nations and the general attitude of nationalism and this idea that countries have to win at the expense of others rather than trying to cooperate.
I think that's an interesting observation on your part. Let's focus on this for a moment. And that, of course, is the fact that Europe has been embroiled in so many wars over many, many centuries. The French, the Brits, the Germans, the French, the Germans, the Brits, the Prussians, the Germans, the Italians,
Macedonians, Serbs.
I'm thinking Western Europe versus Central Europe and Eastern Europe, but a good point. So this is still in the, if shall we say, in the guise of WW1. That's World War I, which by coincidence, we are approaching the 100th anniversary of armistice here.
Yes, very near it.
And so
November the 11th.
Exactly. So we're looking, the perspective in Europe, and I don't want to belabor this, but it is from that perspective that particularly Western Europe, that's randomly from Germany west, sees this conversation and the political environment in which we're living.
I wouldn't say just Western Europe. I think parts of Asia, too. I mean, you know, Japanese nationalism was a major factor in World War II.
You mentioned the competitive nature, of course, that's described in the relationship nationalism versus globalism. And there is a competitive environment here. And as a matter of fact, we're going to touch on this a little later on the program. And that is the economic competition, which the president kind of is focused on. That is, by nature of his background, he is a competitive businessman. So is that not something that we should, you know, at least admit?
It's the attitude, whether it's in business, politics, or military, of I have to win.
Well,
and if I have to win, then you have to lose. Instead of searching for the win-win, Donald Trump, in the view of many, is searching for the win-lose.
Okay, and then
a zero-sum game.
Okay, and then I disagree. I think that he sees the value of all parties being successful. It's just his complaint. And by the way, I just would argue that many in this country agree with him that for too long the U.S. has been really too compliant when it comes to economic issues. And of course, there's the relationship of NAFTA, which I just want to touch on here in just a moment. But first, let's take a quick break here. I want to remind folks, of course, our guest this afternoon, our regular program, it's great to be back to a regular program, is with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240. It's Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we were chatting a moment ago about President Trump's presentation to the UN yesterday. And of course, you were mentioning the delineation between patriotism and nationalism and the concern that many in the European community have with this, back to this nation states and the potential of conflicts. And we've talked about this in relationship to economics as well. And we're going to talk about this in a few minutes also about Brexit, because there's competitive nature there as well. But we're seeing now, in the case of the president's approach to the economy, that and there's still a lot to be decided on NAFTA. The fact that the president has seemed to, from our perspective, at least from my perspective, has evened the table, if you will, leveled the playing field between the U.S. and Mexico and Canada. And it looks like Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. may yet reestablish a new structure for NAFTA. Is that not something that the European community is paying attention to? I don't want to get into the details of it because, quite frankly, many of the details have yet to be determined.
Yeah, I think it's the tactics that are being used. Again, Trump is being seen as an international bully, and by extension, so is the United States. And again, as I said, he seems to be always aiming at and using his power to simply force a win at the expense of someone else.
Well, at the same time.
But when he wins, someone else loses. If America's going to be first, someone has to be second, third, and fourth.
Well, we would argue quickly that, on the contrary, the U.S. has been losing for quite some time.
And yeah, let me give you an example of the U.N., which is something I know a lot of people try to relate to, and they say, you know, we've been ripped off by the U.N. for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true that the United States is the largest contributor to the U.N. Now, there are two sorts of contributions to the U.N. One is mandatory and one is voluntary. The way it works for the mandatory is the same as income tax, basically. Those who earn the most money pay the most.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the U.S. Has 23% of the world's GDP, and so, surprise, surprise, it pays 23% of the GDP of it pays 23% of the running costs for mandatory costs of the U.N. But when it comes to voluntary costs, it is not number one. It is number five.
But wait a second.
It is fifth.
But wait.
It is not the first. It is fifth when it comes to voluntary costs. Britain, Canada, Germany, France, and Japan. Britain and Canada are tied for the top position, and the U.S. is well down the list number five when it comes to voluntary contributions to U.N. bodies.
But wait a second, and we won't belabor this because there's more detail than we need to get into. Look at the amount of contributions the U.S. makes in cases of major disasters. I would argue quickly that it's the U.S. military that steps in many instances to provide the services, and they do it in-kind services as well.
Yeah, which I think as a proportion of their GDP, it's not as great as those other countries.
I would have to disagree with you because I think...
With the figures produced.
All right. Well, I would have to argue the source of those figures. Fake news. No, I just have to argue the source and how we identify those.
The sources are the United Nations.
Well,
sources are also the British, French, German... Japanese governments.
We have yet to ask what is the delineation of these voluntary services. Do you, in fact, include services in kind? That's just a question. We'll get to that at another time because we've got so many other items to talk about. I want to get on to one other quick, I want to get on a longer note, and sadly these two stories are tangentially connected. The Kavanaugh story, and how is that being played in the UK?
Very big. I think it's really front page stuff day after day. There's a chap called Jonathan Friedland, who's has been for a number of years, a commentator for The Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he really put his finger on it on an article today.
And
he says you know, as we know, you know, tomorrow's going to be the big day.
Right.
Christine Blasey Ford is going to appear.
Right.
And that he's saying from a political point of view, it's like 1991 all over again, the Clarence Thomas hearing.
Well, we all agree with that. But what exactly is the feeling now of how the procedure?
I think it could go either way.
Okay, but what are the
basically people here think it could go either way. That no, there's not it's the, reported here that some of the Republican senators are having doubts about Kavanaugh.
Well, only one.
But that the conservatives within the party as a whole are saying, we don't care how the midterm elections go. We've got a chance to put one of our own on the bench for the next 30 or 40 years. And that's more important than winning the Senate elections.
You know, the sad part about this, Tom, and I was talking to a constitutional authority last night, a matter of fact, professor of constitutional law, is we're not looking at, well, one, the overall perspective of the candidate, but it's rather gotten so granular, we want to know what color socks he or she wears or clothing. But the other aspect of this, and I'm just curious, does the European community really comprehend the seediness of this whole procedure? Or that's my description.
But they also think that there's an element of hypocrisy in the part of the Republicans on this one.
Really?
Because, of course, why? Obama faced the same problem when he tried to put his man on the Supreme Court.
Not with the accusations that have been made, unfounded accusations, I might add. And it's a little shocking.
We don't know yet.
Obviously,
the whole thing hangs on the credibility of Christine Blasey Ford's testimony.
Well,
tomorrow. And
Judge Kavanaugh's testimony. I mean,
But one of the points Justin Friedland made, and the points that Justin Friedland made was not so much that, you know, a 17-year-old who was quite possibly got drunk at a party committed a youthful indiscretion, but that if he did. That he's not holding up his hand and said, I was 17 and drunk and I'm really sorry.
Well, wait a second.
He may not have done it. Hang on the credibility of his accuser.
But here's the question.
And we'll find out more about that tomorrow.
I find it fascinating. Just curious, how far back does the community think we should go back into a person's life to determine? At the age of 5, he may have fibbed to his mother.
Well, I'm just glad that I'm not there before the Judiciary Committee, to be quite honest. I think the same can be said about you.
No. I am definitely pristine. But that's another story. That the other aspect of this is, so the community is paying close attention to that. I have one other quick note I want to ask, and I bring it up in the same breath simply because it's another story that has been covered, and it unfortunately involves the issue of the Me Too environment. By the way, has the hashtag Me Too movement had any impact in the European community?
Oh, yes.
To the benefit or negative of the political parties?
Not quite as big as in the States, but there have been a few. We had a big case here before the Me Too movement took off in the States, involving a very, a sort of Cosby-like figure.
Okay.
And that, a chap by the name of Jimmy Savile.
Which reminds me.
And he had died, but his name was dragged through the mud. He was posthumously stripped of his knighthood.
Right.
You know, it was really pretty nasty.
Oh, well.
But he'd done some really nasty things.
But
sexually assaulting underage girls.
Right. It was proven. But that, and there's the issue. There was proof. This is the Kavanaugh case. There is no proof. And I can say that with a great deal of ease.
The only thing I can say in defense of Jimmy Savile, because he was dead, he couldn't defend himself.
Exactly. The question I have for you very quickly, because we got to go to the break, the Bill Cosby trial and the decision, 3 to 10 years, has that gotten much coverage?
Yes, it's got coverage. It's not huge coverage. I mean, he was a very popular actor.
Okay, but he was
they referred to him as America's dad.
Right.
I think probably he was also the world's dad, you know, he was a very lovable person film.
So it did get some coverage. I was just curious. All right, we're going to get into things associated with the European community here in just a moment with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from lookaheadnews.com. There's a new, clearly defined road to political power. Become an anti-politician. Forget about compromise, consensus, and appealing to the middle ground. Dismiss ideas of party loyalty. Discard thoughts of reasoned political debate. No, today's successful politician is a crude, crass, socially unacceptable bully, pandering to the basest human instincts to gain power. Finally, today's successful candidate must be outside the traditional political establishment. You may think that the previous is the start of yet another diatribe against President Donald Trump. In a way, you're right. Trump is the international benchmark. He has lit the torch down this dark and dangerous path, but others are following. The latest addition to this pantheon of horror is Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro. Brazil is important. It is Latin America's largest country, population 207.7 million. It has the eighth largest economy in the world, and it is resource-rich with more potential than an infant Amadeus Mozart. On October 5th, Brazilians trooped to the polls for first-round presidential elections. The runoff between the top two from round one will be held on the 25th of October. At the moment, there are nine candidates. 63-year-old Bolsonaro is 40% ahead of his nearest rival. His commanding lead is partly due to the fact that Bolsonaro is laid up in a hospital bed recovering from a knife attack which provided him with the additional aura of political martyrdom. But even before he was stabbed on the 6th of September, Jair Bolsonaro was streets ahead of his political opponents. To secure pole position, Bolsonaro has out-trumped Trump. On the subject of misogyny, the Brazilian has said that he would not rape a certain congresswoman because she was too ugly. His daughter said Bolsonaro was conceived in a moment of weakness. Maternity pay should be scrapped, and women should be paid less because of pregnancies. Bolsonaro is strongly opposed to gay rights. He said that he would rather his son dead than gay. He advocates widespread gun ownership, the reintroduction of capital punishment, opposes abortion, same-sex marriage, land reform, and drug liberalization. He thinks torture is a great idea and plans to beef up the military and police. An evangelical Christian, he has cornered the Christian right political market, which is estimated to be 29% of Brazil's voters. Bolsonaro's campaign slogan neatly combines a populist nationalism with religious fervor. It is Brazil above everything, God above everyone. Perhaps most worrying is Bolsonaro's views on the military. He was an officer for 17 years before entering the political arena in 1988. He has described the military dictatorship that ran the country from 64 to 1988 as a glorious period that led to 20 years of order and progress. The same dictatorship, according to Human Rights Watch, locked up 50,000 political opponents, tortured 2,000, and forced 10,000 into exile. Bolsonaro, not surprisingly, is loved by the military, but reviled by the traditional Brazilian political establishment. In 25 years in the National Congress, he has been in four different political parties and proposed 173 bills. None of them have passed, because as Bolsonaro admits, you have to be liked and prepared to compromise to succeed in parliament. So, why is the Brazilian public turning to Bolsonaro? Why are the populists of the extreme left and right rapidly rising? Because traditional politics are perceived to have failed. The world has yet to recover from the crash of 2008-2009, which is seen as the fault of bankers supported by self-serving politicos. Brazil has been beset by an embarrassing series of corruption scandals. The economy has shrunk by 10% and unemployment is at 12%. Voters around the world want to drain the swamp of self-serving politicians. But in response, they're turning to the animals of the dark and dangerous forest.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. In fact, it's Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've dealt with all things the U.S., and now we want to move on to things associated with the European community, and we have a list of items to talk about. We chatted earlier, Tom, about the issue of nationalism and the economic challenges and competitiveness. Let's talk about Brexit. And this is a big issue because, in fact, the United Kingdom, for all that it's a member, has been a member of the European Union, it was really a member light. It still used the pound as its form of economy and monetary system. And now, of course, we're waiting with interest. What's the future of the exit from the European Union?
Oh, it's a mess. It's a real mess. There was a summit last week, and Mrs. May put her latest plan, called the Chequers Plan, to the European heads of government, and they said, no, nine, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Completely rejected it, humiliated poor Mrs. May, and you know, she's been made to look absolutely ridiculous. Basically, their objections are that it doesn't solve the problem of the border between North and South Ireland, and it doesn't solve the problem of EU nationals in the UK or UK nationals in Europe, and a number of other issues as well. It just sort of pushes them under the carpet. So now they're talking about something called the Canada deal, which is a variation on the deal that Canada has with the EU. The problem is that that doesn't solve the border between North and South Ireland either, because Canada doesn't have a border with the EU. And also, the Canada deal doesn't have anything to do with the service industry.
Mm-hmm.
And now the service industry in the UK is 80% of our GDP. We're a service-oriented economy. And that is going to be particularly hard hit by withdrawal from the EU. So the Labour Party has said that they are prepared, if necessary, to have another referendum.
Wow.
Okay, they've just finished their party conference. The leadership, Jeremy Corbyn and his friends, would say, yeah, let's have another referendum. They would prefer not to have on the ballot paper the option of remaining in the EU. I don't know what they would want to have on the ballot paper. They're being very cagey about that. But if they can avoid that option, they want to avoid it. Although a lot of people in their party do want to have it. This has made more problems for Mrs. May. Mrs. May's Conservative Party conference is meeting this weekend. And she's going to be coming under a lot of pressure to throw out her Chequers deal, which the EU heads of government have already thrown out. On top of that, the European Court of Justice has agreed to hear an appeal from people who want to have Parliament to have the power to revoke Article 50, which started the Brexit ball rolling. I'm sorry I went on a bit long there, but you know, there was a lot to cover.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what. After Hurricane Florence has passed, we'll be watching with bated breath what's going on in Great Britain there related to the Brexit. I smile. This is part of the growing process and learning how to deal with this globalist community, and brings us always back to the UN speech. There are some real challenges and difficulties associated with this more global approach. All right, let's move on to a few other items here. We chatted briefly earlier in the program about Iran, the United Nations. There are riots in Iran. You've got a great deal of unrest in Iran. And I might add, threats by Iran as a result of a recent terrorist attack and a military march. What's going on? What's the opinion of the European community with what's going on in Iran?
Well, let's start with the opinion of the European community and the sanctions thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the European community says that they're going to be helping companies to bypass U.S. sanctions.
Right.
And that's a given, that they are going to, they're not going to comply with American sanctions against Iran.
Okay.
And that they'll be working with Russia and China and other countries to get around those sanctions.
Okay.
They're very short on the details. No details have emerged yet, but they say it's a definite.
So there's a feeling that Iran can be dealt with trust.
No.
Okay.
The feeling is that an agreement was reached and should be honored, and that by dishonoring that agreement, you are strengthening the Revolutionary Guards and other hardliners in Iran who want to turn to military and terrorist tactics more and more.
But the riots, what about the riots in Iran?
The riots, are we talking about the food riot, the economic riots, or
yes.
are we talking about the attack on the military parade?
The food riots and the economic riots.
Those are probably, those are largely caused by the economic sanctions. So you're having the impact which Trump administration would like, which is creating economic hardship, which is creating difficulties for the government of the Ayatollahs and Hassan Rouhani.
Right.
So that is having the impact which Trump administration would like. The attack on the military parade last Saturday, the parade was staged to mark the anniversary of the end of the Iran-Iraq war.
Right.
That is, two people, two organizations. In fact, several organizations claim responsibility for it. Some are Arab separatist organizations, and the other group is ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got competing claims as to who was responsible for this very long and sustained attack. It took 10 minutes.
Right.
What
is the future? What's the future of the community there? Because Iran has threatened or promised a retribution. Against whom? And one of them is the Arab Emirates. But what is the feeling? Is there potential conflict that's going to result?
We don't know.
Okay.
We don't know. I think people are going to try and get things to calm down. I think Hassan Rouhani's in New York now, and I should think that one of the things that the Europeans are going to be trying to do is try and get him to calm down.
Okay.
Partly with the promise of, we're going to find a way around these sanctions.
All right.
We're going to try and help you. Let's just try and calm things down, because we don't want a war in the Persian Gulf.
Well, we've had a long-going war in the Persian Gulf. I want to move on to other items with
you. Well, we don't want more war.
That's another,
if you do, you do. Okay,
no, it's not
right,
that.
We
just, it's not. It's
week.
Not that. Yeah. It's just that one has to determine what level of warfare you're talking about. When there's constant conflict there. Let's move on to President Erdogan visiting Germany, and you've got a note here. He's considering releasing a U.S. pastor. How come?
It's a bit more complicated. Let's talk about the pastor first.
Okay.
What he said is that it's not a political decision. He said it's up to the court.
Which
court? And I think the court is going to have an appeal hearing on, I think it's the 12th of October, yes.
Okay.
12th of October. I've got a note here.
All right.
Now, he stressed that, this is a court decision. It's not political. And, quote, we have an independent judiciary. Well, the last bit of that is total bollocks. their judiciary is about as independent as Donald Trump.
Here's my question, because we're running short on time. He's visiting Germany. Is he reassessing his relationship with the European Union?
Yes, because he's absolutely poor. His lira's, the Turkish economy has lost 40% of its value since the new year.
But why?
And so he needs German help.
But
and so he's going to stop calling them Nazis.
Okay.
And try to be nice to them.
But
they're
why?
A bit skeptical.
But why? Why are they skeptical? No, why is his economy going in the tank?
Well, his economy is going in the tank because he's done a bad job of managing it.
Well,
and because of U.S. sanctions.
Ah, thank you very much. So it's interesting. It seems that what President Trump has done recently is actually improving relations in the European community. I had to throw that one
in. Well, it was going in the tank before the sanctions.
Yeah, but he contributed significantly to speeding things up. Let's talk very quickly because we are running out of time. Italians and immigration. This is a big story. What's happening there?
Well, they're introducing new legislation to basically start kicking people out of Italy. So they're going to introduce a series of hardline measures that will abolish key forms of protection for migrants and make it easier for them to be deported.
Well, now, the important aspect of this, and I've just got to remind folks, in the European Union, in the community, and if you've, I do not remember the particular title of this regulation. Anyone who enters the European community...
Dublin Agreement.
At their initial point, they are that, and then in many instances, it was Italy or Spain or Greece. Those countries were the countries of, if you will, origin for these immigrants. And if the immigrants were to be removed from any of the other communities in Western Europe, they would be removed back to their country of origin. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, the country which they entered the EU. Yeah. Yes.
And so Italy has a great deal of responsibility here just for being the point of origin or the point of entry. So
yeah. So does Greece, Spain, right. Malta.
Okay.
Those are the countries which are most affected.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to other items.
Cyprus.
Okay. And then... real quickly, Swedish Prime Minister is resigning.
Yes, Stefan Löfven.
How come?
Now this is a bit of a surprise. Well, you know, it was a surprise that the right wing Swedish Democrats did it as well as they did. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, people thought they'd do even better, but he has suffered a vote of no confidence in the Swedish Parliament, and he's had to resign. Now, he represents the Social Democrats. The Social Democrats have been in power in Sweden since 1917.
Okay, I've got to go to a break. My question to you is this an indication that there's more populist / nationalist interest in Sweden?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right.
There's no doubt about it.
That's what I will bring to a conclusion. I've got to go to a break here with you, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're in the final lap of our hour-long program. And just to remind you, Tom is joining us earlier in the day to meet his sleeping schedule. As this program is wrapping up, it's almost midnight where Tom lives in London, England. Tom, I want to talk about two quick items here. We've got an election in Brazil. What's the status of that?
Well, this is another populist who it looks as if he might be elected. The elections, the first round of elections are on the 5th of October and the second are on the 26th of October.
Mm-hmm.
And the person concerned is a man called Jair Bolsonaro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people like him because he's not part of the political establishment. He says awful things about people. Awful things. He said about one woman, I wouldn't rape her because she's ugly.
Oh, my gosh.
And I would prefer a dead son to a gay one.
And
people descended from slaves are just fat and lazy.
Oh.
Okay? So he is about as politically as incorrect as they come. And because of that, they like him because he's not part of the political class. And in fact, all the politicians, he's a congressman, all the politicians dislike him because he's not one of them, really. He's out there, far out on a limb, saying outrageous things. But the people are so fed up with the corruption among politicians in Brazil that they're flocking to him. Now, the one thing to note about Bolsonaro, there is a group of people who do like him, and that's the military.
And he
has been linked with military people who have actually publicly said they should be back in government running a military dictatorship in Brazil. And he has said that he would appoint military people to key positions if he was elected president.
That is scary. We'll watch that with a great deal of interest. And by the way, there's a little bit of humor in what you said, but at the same time, a great something.
I was wondering if you caught the parallels.
Yes. All right. Well, it's intriguing because it leads to our last item of the day. And usually it's with humor. There was a little humor in your initial description here a moment ago in Brazil. Let's move to Peru. What is this about?
Peru. Oh, yes. Hitler's running for office.
Hitler.
He's running for mayor in a town in the Andes in Peru. His first name is Hitler. His last name is Alba. But he's being opposed by Lenin, whose full name is Lenin Rodriguez. I love it.
He's wrapping it up. This is the pleasure of the program right here, ladies and gentlemen, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World. And again, if you'd like to make comment, feel free to do so by email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. And of course, via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World here on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.